we go with Jeremy Scott.
Monday night from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. I am Jeremy Scott. Welcome to our third week of weeknight shows. Appreciate you being with us. We always try to bring you fascinating shows and subjects that always keep you wondering and guessing what really is going on. Is everything as it appears? Skype is ITP51. Phone in numbers 503-506-0396. Tonight on the program, we're actually going to tie a few things together that we've been discussing of late. And honestly, I'll even go further. I think we'll expand even upon tonight's conversation and this past Saturday night's conversation coming up shortly. And I look forward to really being able to expand upon some of these topics more in depth with Five Nights a Week. Recently, I've been talking about some apparent divine intervention happening with the appearance of strange objects, otherwise known as UFOs or UAP, that are appearing over areas where they're being seen by a lot of people. It was a couple of months ago that I talked about the apparent divine intervention. This force from the sky, it appeared to be UFOs. Soldiers, when they called home to their parents, were saying it's as if the sky lit up and the Russian forces were expelled. Now, there's been bloodshed on either side. When there's an active war happening, I think whoever is behind these objects, whoever is piloting them, whether physically or with their mind or otherwise, that they might be definitely interested in what is going on. Certainly interested in how us humans are behaving, and we've been misbehaving lately, and we've been giving them quite the show. And over Ukraine, there have been these cosmic and phantom UFOs. For folks who are going to be listening on Ground Zero Radio with Clyde Lewis, that's the topic of tonight's program. We talked about those UFO sightings that were happening over Ukraine that have escalated since the war began, and if there is some other higher advanced civilization behind that. If you didn't hear the program, pulling back the veil, well, I highly encourage it. But between all that, the lights appearing over Ukraine, the divine intervention that the troops have reported over there, I also have heard in the last week that there have been reports that the Ukrainian forces have pushed back the Russians and have recaptured some territory. And if that's the case, we could argue that it is because of the money that the U.S. has sent over there, arming them, basically. We could also argue, I guess, based on the reports, that there could be some higher power or higher being here. And we know that Ezekiel in the Bible saw this wheel in the sky. But from my understanding, it is not the only example of a UFO or an unidentified flying object in the Bible. And I understand that this is a very perceptual topic, because when you read text that was written thousands of years ago, it does leave a little bit up to interpretation. I'm pleased to have here tonight author of the book UFOs in the Bible. His name is Ken Goodsword, and he has written about some of these ancient truths that he says are really just kind of hidden in plain sight. Ken, welcome to the program. It's so good to have you here.
Thank you. It's awesome to be here, Jeremy. It's a real privilege to be able to talk about this stuff with you guys and to share it with your listeners. Really looking forward to it.
You say these are ancient truths. So how ancient, Ken?
Well, that's a good question. We don't really know when much of the Bible was written. there are certain kind of pinpoints where you can stick a pin in and go, well, that actually relates to historical material. One of the big ones is the Babylonian captivity of Israel. There's about a 200-year period where Israel is essentially captured and taken as prisoners of war to Babylon, and this occurs under the reign of several of the Babylonian kings that are well-known historical figures, such as Nebuchadnezzar and a few of the other kings. So it's very well recorded and historical. So that part is quite easy to date, and that puts us in around 600 BC ish in that range, and then through up to about 520 BC. So there's about a 100-year period that's very well documented, and that includes the several prophets who had UFO encounters, it seems, and that includes Ezekiel, Jeremiah, Daniel, and Zechariah specifically. They were all in Babylon at the time, and all apparently saw these metallic objects come down from the sky, and some very strange things happening. So I talk a lot about those. It's interesting, though, that you mention this sort of connection with battle and with war. Out of the 45 separate UFO events in the Bible that I discuss, there's actually more that didn't make it into the book, either because I wasn't aware of them yet, or a few that I just didn't, I'm not ready to talk about. But there's 45 events that I do discuss in the book. I would say that easily half of them do seem to have some kind of a wartime connection, whether it be directly military or more of a political kind of a twist to it. A lot of the prophets are bringing political messages. I would say most notably, King David in the Psalms discusses these cherubim, he calls them. But at some points there, he says there are 10,000s upon 10,000s, and he describes them coming down with force and basically doing battle with helping out his side of a battle that was happening. So, very strange. Like, we have literal and direct UFO intervention on the battlefield, and that is described in several of the Psalms.
So give us some perspective about what do you think's going on here? Do you think that they're rendering some weapons useless? Do you think they are watching? Are they intervening?
Well, in the case of David, they were definitely intervening. Most of the other examples that I've looked at are less direct. However, there are other examples in the Book of Exodus and throughout the conquest of Canaan, where the Israelites were taking over the land. It's a little bit less explicit, but there's literally a thing that Yahweh says he's sending in to bring chemical warfare into the land ahead of the Israelites coming in. Yeah, there's definitely some strange things going on, and a lot of it has to do with sort of like territorial, I guess, who is supposed to be here and who's authorized to be in certain territories and things like that. And there is some evidence, although it's not like it's not really super clear, but there's some evidence that Yahweh had a specific territory that was his, and there were other gods who had other territories, and at times they appeared to be having some conflict around those territory assignments.
So as far as the story of Ezekiel, what did he see?
Well, he describes, essentially he describes a lot of really strange things. So yeah, there's wheels. He's talking about round things. Now we interpret it as wheels, but it doesn't specifically say wheels. But it does, the language that he's using is difficult to decipher. But there are certain things that we can glean out of, his descriptions. And so, I think that it is rather inaccurate to say that it was literally a wheel with eyes on it, because I think that he is using some terms that are basically like not exact. Like, I don't think he necessarily was seeing eyes, but something that looked like eyes. So whether that was cameras or just lights or flashing lights, it's hard to say, but there's certainly a lot of room for interpretation around those descriptions. Now, what I've done is I've, rather than simply read one description, I look at the encounters of Ezekiel. He had three encounters, and Isaiah also had several, and they basically use very similar language. And what you notice is, if you look at all of these, let's just look at these five examples of those two prophets. When you start to look at those their encounters chronologically and try to piece together the verbiage that they're using to describe what they're seeing, you notice that there's a bit of an evolution in how they describe it, because it seems that they're kind of learning as they go. And so when the first time Ezekiel sees this thing, he doesn't even really know how to describe it. He's, you know, trying to put words together to make any kind of sense, and he's baffled by it. Later on, you see his understanding grow, and he begins to use more specific terminology. And in fact, he straight up says in one of the later encounters, I heard this item being called by this name. So it's almost as though he were, in that case, he was kind of like in a, almost like a hangar where they were preparing for takeoff. And he was able to hear, like almost like if you imagine a NASA launch, they're saying things like, you know, navigational systems go, you know, check engines go, this kind of thing. And it sounds like he was actually hearing something like that happening. And so that allowed him to put some specific words, some jargon onto some of the things that he was witnessing. So I kind of try to flush that out a little bit. And by comparing those accounts and considering them all as a single phenomena, I believe it actually adds up and starts to make some sense.
And in some cases, what did they witness the same UFO many times over?
Yes, but it doesn't always sound like it, because they describe it slightly differently. Because as they're going, they're like, oh, actually that was this. And so, yeah, it might not seem like it if you simply read those passages separately, but once you consider them all together, I believe that they are describing the same craft multiple times.
Very, very interesting. As far as some of those encounters, one of those encounters involved the three wise men, isn't that correct?
Yes. So the birth of Jesus in as described in Matthew chapter 1 and 2. There's actually a couple of separate encounters, I guess, but probably the same ship, because you have the three wise men coming from the east and following this UFO that is hovering, that is going slow enough that they can follow it from wherever they're coming from, which was quite far away. Like, it wasn't even just a couple days journey, but a long journey. And yet it was low enough that it would take them to a specific house, or at least a specific neighborhood. So I don't know of any celestial events that happen both slowly and can pinpoint a specific house.
I think you said there are, what, several dozen of these encounters within the pages of the Bible. When you make that claim, and if I'm not putting words in your mouth, if that is indeed what you said, do you get some resistance to that claim at all?
You know, I fully expected to, but so far I haven't really gotten any hate mail or anything, so that's fine with me. And you're right, you're not putting words in my mouth. I did say 45 separate events, and honestly, it's probably at least 50. And the funny thing is that these are not isolated incidents, and they didn't occur just in one geographic location or one even in one era, but they occurred over a long time span that, according to my timeline that I'm putting together, which granted, it's not precise, but from the best I can figure, we're talking about an 11,000-year period where there are essentially, they seem to be the same types of UFO craft visiting Earth on numerous occasions.
Very interesting. And this was something that changed your perspective, right, as a Christian, because you didn't grow up believing this to be the case, right?
That's absolutely correct. We were always taught that these were encounters with God. And, you know, there is a sense in that is true. I mean, these are people who had a strange experience, and in many cases it was a spiritual experience of sorts. I mean, what do we mean by spiritual? I'm not really sure. But one thing is that it's important and it's life-changing. And many, many times it has a moral component, or, you know, ethics and things like that, and, you know, what we should do. So in those terms, these are all spiritual experiences, because in every one of these cases, the experiencer was very much shocked, and they could not simply go about life the way that they had been. In many of the cases, they were so affected to actually change their name right after the encounter. So it really changes their identities and really sets them onto a path which frankly is we are still living with the repercussions, because some of the people who were affected in this way are key players in what we still have as major religions that are you know, they have billions of adherents that are still following them. So when you look at a guy like Abraham or a guy like Moses, these guys are still, like, even though they've been dead for thousands of years, they still hold a lot of power and a lot of sway with the things that they said and the things that they wrote.
We talked about divine intervention previous, and as far as that's concerned, what does what kind of stories involve UFOs and divine intervention besides the ones you've already shared?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. Like, I will mention Abraham, even though in the Bible, Abraham's encounter is not mentioned in the Bible, but it is merely hinted at because it basically says in the past tense, or the past perfect tense, actually, it says Abraham had an encounter, had. So it's like Yahweh had come to Abraham and told him the message. And the very strange part about that is that why isn't that story in the Bible? But it's not. And, you know, that may surprise people because we kind of think that it is in there. We think we know Abraham's story. And, you know, you could point to Genesis, I believe it is, I can't think of the chapter that it's in. I should have it sitting here, but I don't see it. Anyway, there's a classic verse in the Bible that says, you know, and Yahweh came to Abraham and told him to leave the land of Ur, which is Sumer, and told him to go into another land. But if you actually read it and pay attention to each word, what you find is that that's not happening now, in like when the story is taking place. He's referring to something that already happened and presumably was already written down, and the reader was supposed to already be aware of that story. So it kind of makes you wonder why that story was taken out, or how it got lost, if it was such an important part of the story, because it was really the key. Abraham is like the father of three religions. So Judaism and Islam and Christianity, of course, all see Abraham as like the founding father of their religion. And so the fact that his conversion is only hinted at, and we don't actually get to see the details, smacks of conspiracy to me. And I'm not necessarily one to go down that road, but somewhere somebody has to have specifically taken that story out.
This one is very, very fascinating, because I understand that you have dug up a story about some sort of dinner that was had on board an alien craft. I mean, it is the dinner hour now. So I'm interested, what kind of course was served?
Well, I don't know that, but this is a very bizarre story. So Moses is probably one of the most talked about people in the Old Testament, and probably in the entire Bible aside from Jesus. Moses in many ways is more important than Abraham, because of his role in leading the Israelites out of Egypt, out of slavery, and bringing, giving them the law, which essentially is the Torah, really is also the basis for Christianity, in terms of the old covenant, and that Jesus comes and talks about that and brings a new covenant. But still, Moses is a central figure, and the things that he did were critically important, among which he's given credit for writing the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And so Genesis and Exodus, of course, being extremely important books in terms of, telling about even the creation of man and the creation of the world, and how we have culture and all that stuff. So I've heard I've heard thousands, and I'm not exaggerating here, of sermons involving Moses, as have probably most Christians and most Jews as well. I couldn't believe my eyes when I was reading the book of Exodus, and there was a lot of things that jumped out at me as, well, wait a minute, that's not how this story goes, but I'm reading it. So one of the craziest things takes place in Exodus chapter 14, and this is the story of Moses going up Mount Sinai, And we all know about Moses going up Mount Sinai. He goes up and he gets the Ten Commandments and he comes back down. Then he smashes them and he goes up again and has to do it. So he goes up twice, right? Wrong. Moses goes up Mount Sinai seven times, at least, possibly or six. It's between six and eight. There's a little bit of, we can't tell exactly because of the language being a little bit fluid sometimes. But he, on one of the trips up, and I believe it was the fourth or fifth trip up, before they got the, they got the Ten Commandments, Yahweh actually told Moses to bring a whole bunch of people with him. And it was the 70 elders of Israel. And so he had already been going up and down a couple times, and he had his kind of cork posse. He's got his brother Aaron, and he's got Joshua, and he's got a couple of priests and stuff. So there was like five other guys who were probably with him but weren't named on this specific verse. But it does say, come on up and bring the 70 elders. So you've got Moses, you've got 70 elders, and probably five other guys. So there's, I think, 76 people. They go up Mount Sinai, and we see a lot of details about what happens up there. And it's very strange. So it says that they supped with the Elohim. And, of course, the Elohim is a plural. And it many people translate it as God, but it's plural, so maybe it's gods. But even then, Elohim, it's just a word, and there's the root word is El, which some people translate that as like the powerful ones, which is kind of like the gods, right? But actually, the word El, which is the ultimate root of this word, simply means to. And like as in going to someplace, and any word ending with im means the people who did whatever, and then it refers to the root word. So in this case, Elohim, literally the literal translation of Elohim is the people who came to where? Well, to here, to earth. So the implication is that they are extraterrestrial beings who came from somewhere else and came to Earth. So now we have 75 humans and an unspecified number of extraterrestrials. And in this Bible verse, it tells us that they sat down and they had dinner. It talks about the chairs and the tables and stuff like that. But what it really is, strangely, the most time is spent on describing how beautiful the floor is. Well, if you're up on a mountain and you're sitting down to have dinner, well, A, there's no tables and chairs probably, and there certainly isn't a floor. And what they talk about in terms of that floor is that it's blue and sparkling and shiny. Well, I don't know of any mountains that have a naturally occurring shiny blue floor where you can sit and have a dinner party of 70 or up to 100 people. So from that clue, it seems like they're in a ship, which, of course, reading the rest of the book of Exodus, you can see the occasions where the first time the Elohim arrive, they come, there's this thunder, there's...
We got to wrap it up, Ken. I'm sorry, we are out of time. Okay. Your closing comment.
Oh, yeah, okay, sure. Hey, thanks. It was great to be here.
Fantastic. Your website is what?
Dimensionfold.com.
And the book is UFOs in the Bible. He is Ken Goodsward. I appreciate you coming on the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Keep your eyes to the skies, friends. You never know what you might see. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, I'm Jeremy Scott. Good night.
Thank you.